Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, January the 9th. As we like to do once a week, we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. And we've got a lot to get into with Bill, so let me say hello to our friend Bill. I always ask you how everything is going in New York, and I understand that the buses that were supposed to come from Colorado are not coming anymore, Bill.
No, apparently, after all these months of telling us that sending buses from Colorado and from the border are absolutely necessary to maintain the sanctity of the Republic and our contribution to mankind, that the buses have suddenly stopped. And apparently, within the Democratic Party, there were some decisions that this was embarrassing to the Democrats. So the hell with mankind, the hell with the future of the country, let's just stop the buses. I mean, the whole thing, I think, has now been exposed, the whole border policy, the immigration policy, as basically a stunt to provide additional voters for the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And really very, very little else. The president visited the border, which is hilarious. I think he spent, a couple of hours going to very predetermined and pre-cleaned and pre-sanitized facilities, but he didn't see the actual border. And I think that all border policy from now on will be based on what is good for politics.
That's it. Well, he was there around the time that the Cowboys were playing, Bill. So everybody was probably at home watching the Cowboys game and forgot that the president was there, because that was an empty city that he landed in. I mean,
that's exactly right. Yes,
they cleaned up that city, Bill. I mean, what they did, I understand why they did it, I guess, because they wanted to, they didn't want to have people on the streets, literally laying on the streets. But can you imagine if that had been done in anticipation of a visit by President Trump or President Bush, Bill?
Well, of course. I mean, scandal, scandal, scandal.
Yes.
You have a press that is really now so corrupt that I don't know. I mean, I think the press has become a danger to the country. I really do. Now, President Trump implied that some years ago, and he immediately was denounced as being a man who was making an assault on our democracy. I see finally people have realized that that phrase is a code word for the Democratic Party.
That's right.
On our democracy. I was not aware that criticizing the press was an attack on democracy. I thought that's what democracy was all about. You can say what you want. But,
that's
right.
Well, that's what I thought too, Bill. I'm learning something new every day. Because that's what I thought, too. I thought that exchange of ideas, even competing newspapers, writing different editorials, I thought that's what it was all about, Bill.
Yes, so did I. But we were misinformed. We were misinformed by white supremacists, and Bibi Netanyahu. I mean,
the two great sources of disinformation. The leader of Israel and white supremacists, the two big sources
Speaking of white supremacists, apparently there are quite a few white supremacists nowadays who are black and Latina, because Woke Central, I don't know where, it's a secret place. I think they're on the side of a mountain somewhere. Woke Central has told us to be aware of African Americans who don't follow the party line, like Representative Donalds, who was denounced by Cori Bush, the great American patriot from Missouri, as basically just a stuntman for the political right. And then there was a lieutenant congresswoman who was called a front woman for white supremacists by some MSNBC host who warned the Latino population in the United States about people like her who don't follow the party line, and and reminded us that she is taking the positions of white supremacy.
Yes.
You know, it's really reaching the point now. There is a point of absurdity that I think people realize, and even liberals are beginning to react. I was reading a piece yesterday about conditions in Hollywood, which used to be my industry, that many people privately, they will not say it publicly, are beginning to become so resentful about the political correctness that has overtaken Hollywood and the woke mentality, where they get open indications or open comments from companies, no white men to be hired. I mean, that is just exactly the opposite of what we were fighting against in the civil rights movement. And now it has become part of the of industries. We're hoping that it has now reached the point where there'll be a big backlash. I think there is a backlash. How effective it will be depend on how effective the Republican Party is, not only on the national level, but on the local level as well, whether they can keep their promises and put enough people in place on local school boards, local government, to really allow change to be made to return us to a traditional system where you are judged by the content of your character and by your abilities.
Right. Well, Bill, I think it's only a matter of time before somebody talking about content of character. I think it's only a matter of time before somebody cancels that speech by Reverend Martin Luther King.
That
speech, of course,
yes.
That, well, I guess it was 60 years ago this summer.
1963.
Yeah, that's right. The speech where he talked that he wanted his children to be judged by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. I always thought that's what.
Hello? Hello?
I'm sorry, did you miss me there for about 20 seconds? I think
Yes, I did, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I somehow got muted. I don't know by who. Maybe Reverend Sharpton muted me because I was muted for about 10 seconds. But what I was going to say,
that was a warning from Woke Central.
Well, that's it. That's it. You got to take those people seriously. But
yes.
No, what I was saying is that this young woman from, I think that part you did catch about the congresswoman from Florida. But the part that was really sick, and I mean, this is really sick, the part about the football player. The whole nation, I mean, I thought the reaction by the country was absolutely incredible in support of this young man who suffered that problem, cardiac arrest or whatever it was during the game. I thought the country reacted in such an amazing way. But, you know, there comes somebody saying, well, you know, this is all right racism or supremacy or whatever. And the coach, one of the coaches who's one of the commentators on NBC, tweeted back at that saying, no, come on, cut that out. This has nothing to do with racism. This was just a very unfortunate event where a young man got hurt, you know, and cut the racism. So I was happy to see, this is Coach Dungy, I think, Tony Dungy, he won a Super Bowl, I believe, with the Colts. Back about 10 years ago or so, and he's now the commentator at NBC Sunday Night Football. And he hit back at that really hard, and I'm happy to see that because he's a very respected African-American football player and now coach and commentator. But these people are crazy, Bill. Everything is about race. Everything has to be turned into something about race. Look, I've had it with it. I'm sure you do too.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think most people do. I really believe most people have had it with that.
And I think many people in minority groups themselves realize they're just being exploited, that they're not gaining anything from this stuff. Yes, there were people who said this demonstrates racism in the football, that too many black players are injured. No more black players are injured than white players. It's a game with some hazards. We know that. and discussing the danger of football is perfectly okay. It's been discussed many times, but to try to turn it into a race issue. But that is a derivation of the notion that we heard so much in the 1960s from the feminist movement, that the personal is political. Everything is political. Everything has political. No, it doesn't. Not everything is not political. The great contribution the United States of America made to the world was the concept of individual rights, that you're an individual and you have individual rights and individual responsibilities. You can go through life and do anything you damn please under the law. You don't have to even vote if you don't want to. You don't have to engage in any political act if you don't want to, and that is the greatness of freedom. But these people don't understand that, and they wouldn't approve of it anyway.
That's right. No, they're out of their minds. They're so disconnected from reality that it's amazing. But there is a bit of good news in all of this, Bill, which may be part of the backlash that you're talking about. Victoria's Secret, great company where people never heard of anybody who went into Victoria's Secret to look for a political message, Bill.
No.
There were lots of messages, but not political. And apparently they had a CEO who decided to go woke, and now she's gone. The company has taken a beating. And, go woke, go broke. Another casualty, Bill.
Exactly. I was amused by that story. I mean, I don't know how you can be woke in Victoria's Secret. I mean, what do you do? I mean, the ideas come to mind, but they're not discussable on a family show.
No.
But the fact is, if you read some of the columns that are now coming out, some of the stories about Hollywood, it has gotten so frightening out there that finally people, even if they're whispering it and don't want to be quoted, are using the correct term, that this is McCarthyism. This is what McCarthyism looks like. People are just constantly accused of racism, of sexism, of this, on the basis of nothing. And once accused, your career is basically over. We're reading
right
now a story of a very heroic college professor, a chemist, a man with a very distinguished record in research, who got out of the research business and took a job at a community college so he could help young students who weren't making it in science to become scientists, to become doctors. He thought they were salvageable. What a terrific thing to do. And he has now been fired from his college for apparently being unwoke and making comments that some young minority girl considered offensive. No trial, no real consideration, nothing. No reflection on this man's brilliance and what he has done. He has a whole list of students that he has saved who have gone on to great things in science because of his guidance, his mentorship. No, of no importance. He offended a minority. Therefore, he was fired. And this kind of thing, it's democracy moves slowly, but when it moves, it moves decisively. And I get a feeling we may be coming to the end of the woke era, that people have just about had it. And
the shareholders have had it.
Yes.
I mean, the shareholders are starting to realize that this is not a good policy, that when you go woke, you put their shares at risk.
Absolutely.
Look at Disney. Look at Victoria's Secret now.
Disney. I mean, I understand that Mickey Mouse has opened a GoFundMe page.
That's right.
I mean, it's
I wouldn't be surprised because they're struggling over there.
Yes, but the fact is also that apparently there are still some executives at Disney who want to stay the course. You know, one of the things, there's an old expression in politics that personnel is policy. It's who you hire. And while they now have replaced their CEO, there are apparently many executives at the mid-level at Disney who want to keep on making these woke movies, even though they're not finding any audience. And Netflix has announced it's building a big movie studio in New Jersey. Now, why in the world would they be building a big movie studio in New Jersey at a time when they're losing money, or at least way down in profits? Well, apparently they have some confidence in the future of wokeness, although we hear from inside Netflix, they now recognize they cannot keep on putting out products that have no audience. So maybe there will maybe there will be a change, or maybe the change will just be announced and secretly they'll be doing the same thing. But this is a terrible era. It is very similar to McCarthyism. And unfortunately, we have in Washington people who have the power to put an end to it, possibly through even a constitutional amendment or legislation that bars this kind of reverse bigotry, but they don't have the power to do it. And we have to now hope that in 2024 the Republicans actually come alive with the campaign and get behind a presidential candidate like Governor DeSantis, who understand what this is about and are willing to take action.
Yeah. You know, Bill, I put a post over at the American Thinker today talking about Victoria's Secret, and I was asking the question, why is it that executives like this lady who was the CEO there with great university backgrounds, great talent, why is it that they make these mistakes? And then you go down the street here, not far from where I am, and there's a gentleman from Vietnam who came here in the 1970s. He's not educated, but he's a good businessman. And I remember a couple of years ago, I went by and I asked him, why don't you sell that particular thing? And he said, because my customers don't want it. And I'm sitting there saying, he figured it out, Bill. This guy
with
no education, he figured it out. But all of these extremely well-educated, you know, well-spoken, articulate people who show up in all the business channels, they keep making the mistake. I mean, it's got to be it's frustrating, Bill, to see that.
Well, I think we probably should do away with the term well-educated. They are they have degrees. They have the piece of paper. But what goes behind that paper, a lot of people don't know. I mean, these are not the universities that used to exist. They were not perfect, but at least they taught a real curriculum. Nowadays, you can go to schools and get degrees in how to save the world, how to destroy the United States. I'm being facetious, but it's not very far from the truth. Now, one thing that I did notice in the last week, and again, this is wokeism, and it's continuing. In a big way, this has not been defeated yet, that a number of corporations are now asking that applicants for positions not list the schools they went to. And they say it's unfair. It's not equitable. And just say what degree you have. Well, it was immediately pointed out that a degree in history, for example, from Columbia is very different from a degree in history from Joe Jones's College and Grill in some other place. But no, they say a degree is just a degree. That's all. We'll just see it as a degree. Well, you know, people knock their heads out to get into what, quote, are the best schools. They may not be the best schools, but they're the ones they think so. And then are immediately told that it's a liability, that you're privileged for going there, so we won't even mention it. All we're going to do is discourage excellence, which, of course, is one of the goals of the woke movement, because their idea is that excellence is really white supremacy, another name for white supremacy. And we are going to start to fall behind other countries, which I think we already are. And they're going to also find that the world is not buying what we're selling when we get to that point. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling, I just wonder when it's going to be, that a major scientist at an American university, a Nobel laureate or a member of the National Academy of Sciences, gets a letter from some foreign country, possibly India, saying, dear doctor, this, we understand that you are having some difficulties in the United States with recent trends. We would like to offer you an opportunity to come to India at a salary three times what you're getting now. We will set you up in beautiful housing. We will give you the best laboratory, and you can still keep your American citizenship. I don't think that time is very far off. I think we're going to be raided by other countries, just as other countries were raided. I mean, people wanted to come to the United States. Now I think we're going to find that people are going to want to get out of the United States if they're at a certain level, knowing that they're marketable around the world. And there could be, for example, again, a country like India, setting up a whole region, a scientific region, which will be consisting of the world's best scientists, the world's best labs. This is possible. It isn't that expensive. And I imagine that other countries that want to rise are going to make those offers. You know, It's very much like the situation we had in the United States, where colleges at a mid-level started to raid top colleges for their talent, paying a lot of money, but they began having great faculties, great facilities. A college like Vanderbilt, which at one time was a kind of a no place, now has become an important university because they took the advice of people who actually knew something about building a university, and they started acquiring students at a certain level with scholarships. They started acquiring first-class professors, and they are now ranked much higher. It's not going to be long. I think our so-called great universities are in for the shock of their lives when they find out that they're when they start getting the resignation letters from some of their top people.
Well, Bill, if we're not supposed to, I saw that article too about not naming your university or where your degree was from. If we're going to start doing now, then are we going to be refunded by the amount of money that we spent in certain universities? You know, because you can get a if the name of the university is a, I guess, is discrimination or whatever they call it, then, you know, why not just everybody go to a online school, save a lot of money. If the degree, you know, that way everybody is, you don't have to worry about discriminating because you say you got your MBA from Harvard. You can just get it from an online school. I'm not knocking online schools, by the way. Some of them are very good. But I think you understand the point that a lot of these colleges are extremely expensive, and that's part of what you're – the reason you pay for it is because there's supposed to be a value in saying that you have an MBA from Harvard, for example.
Well, yes, that's exactly right. I mean, people go in part for the prestige and part for, in some cases, a superior education that may or may not be given, and that's a very important point to make. But now they're being told, well, you can't mention the name because it's not equitable. The people who didn't go to that college will feel badly and feel hurt, and the fact that they never studied a day in their life will never be brought out. Yes, I think you're already beginning to see a decline in enrollment in American colleges, a decline in what they call the yield, which is the number of students who actually go to a college that they're accepted to. We know that there are scholarship programs for certain people, but not for other people, and that is becoming an outrageous situation also. I see for the first time a real critique of the university system. I hope it grows. Remember, we may be on the right side of history, but they're on the right side of money. I mean, they have big alumni associations that protect them. You know, if you're a member if you're a Harvard alumnus, you are a member of a very select body with a lot of money, and they don't really care what gets taught today. They just want to protect the value of their degree. So there'll be backlashes either way, but I have to believe that in the end, the parents' revolt that we see beginning and we saw beginning in Virginia will begin to spread, and I think it will. You have obstacles all over the place. One of the obstacles, for example, to improving the American high school, which desperately needs improvement, is the fact that the high schools contain the college admissions letters and the college admissions recommendations, and they can hurt a student, and people are aware of that. And the world of education is very vicious, very unfair. I mean, you're going to start you start seeing these outstanding students being rejected to a school that is taking the most mediocre students, and you know that money has something to do with it, where the scholarship money is, where the other money is. It's a very, very hard fight that we're fighting, but I think it can be won.
Well, it's interesting because I saw a note. I don't remember where I saw this. I think maybe I sent you the article. I don't remember right now. That university enrollment is down, but at the same time, enrollment in Christian or religious universities
is up.
And you wonder, you know, you wonder why that is. Well, I don't have all the data, but I'm going to guess that one big reason is that you would rather have your son go to a religious university than a public one, because they're going to treat your son a heck of a lot better at a religious university than they will at one of these public colleges where, every evil in the world is associated with white men. You know, after
That's
a while,
right.
You know, it's like you're going to this college and you're the source of all evil in the world, Bill.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's also very similar to what is happening to Broadway in New York, which is kind of fading away, the great Broadway. And they haven't figured out yet that most people, especially tourists, do not want to pay $115 for a ticket to be told how terrible they are. You know, and that's just not what people do. They already destroyed a good part of Broadway before the pandemic, but now, I mean, it's a struggle to get back, and you get all these woke plays and these woke musicals, which have music, a score where every song sounds exactly the same as every other song, and at the same time, they can occasionally go to revivals of truly great musical plays and regular plays. They have that on Broadway too, and that's what fills up the theaters. Not plays that say, "You mean I am a slave in my own country today?" Oh yes, it really does. Oh, and the people in the audience are saying, "You know, I spent $600 for my family to see this, and no more."
That's right. No, you're so right about that. I mean, people want to be entertained, and somehow being told that you're the source of all the evil in the world may not be good entertainment, Bill. But
no,
that's the way it is. But I agree with you. I see the pendulum swinging, and that's a good thing. And one of the best places for the pendulum to swing is with the shareholders, because when you start hurting their pockets, They're gonna make a lot of noise. Bill, let's take a little break, and when we come back, we got a few more things to get into with our friend Bill Katz. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Just a quick historical note, Bill, that I'll drop this for just a second. President Nixon was born on this day in 1913, passed away in 94. I remember the day that he passed away. We were in the car going to a baseball game when the story broke that he had passed away right there in New York. But I find something interesting about President Nixon. You know, I find that his place in history, I mean, it'll never be among the great ones, but it seems to be inching up, Bill. You know, he's now like at something like 25 or 26, which is not that bad, really, when you think of where he was just, 30, 40 years ago, Bill.
Yes, and it's not that bad considering who's doing the rating. It's the historians who work in universities. But, yes, that and also... one of the even more dramatic is the very, very substantial increase in approval among historians of Dwight Eisenhower, for whom Nixon worked as vice president. As more and more came out about Eisenhower, as the papers of his administration were released after a certain number of years, scholars began to look at it and they said, this guy really knew what he was doing. And he's now ranked at number five or six. Whereas at one time he was kind of considered, well, just an interim president. He was much more than that. But in the case of Nixon, Nixon is one of those great tragedies who was very capable, very knowledgeable, took his work very seriously as president, especially in foreign policy, but he had a dark side that he couldn't control. Mm-hmm. The same thing can be said of Donald Trump. Trump, in terms of policies, had some of the best policies during his administration, helped an awful lot of Americans, especially working people, to get out from under these trade deals that were legislated by, you know, Ivy League graduates who never met a worker in their lives. And he was one of the reasons he became so popular among them. But unfortunately, he also has a personality that has turned off so many people that I really do think his stock in the Republican Party is fading, that people are now saying, look, thank you very much for the good policies, but we have to move into the future. Right. And I don't even know if he's going to run. He says he's going to run. I don't know if he is. He's a very proud man, and I don't think he wants to go down to defeat by not getting his party's nomination. So I think that's to be seen. But in the case of Nixon, yes, Nixon, after he was forced out of office, forced to resign over Watergate, had Watergate occurred under a Democratic administration, it would have been on page 96. But Nixon was always a target of the political left. Get Nixon. And they have this scandal, which indeed did occur, and his mishandling of it, which indeed did occur, and they got Nixon. But the fact is, much was done under his administration of significance. That doesn't mean you have to agree with everything. For example, it was he who opened China to the Western world.
Right.
Now, that's a very important development. You can debate historically whether it was good or bad. That's a perfectly reasonable discussion to have. But he did it. He also formed the EPA, the Environmental Protection Administration. He did other things to advance
Title
minority.
Title 12, you know. Title 12 yes. for the women in sports.
Yeah,
that was signed by him.
Yes, I think it was Title 9.
Title 9 or whatever, it was for
and
women's sports.
And
that's a big thing.
Yes, and that's being destroyed by leftists.
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Destroyed. The
hypocrisy. That's exactly right.
Just
In fact, there was an incident here recently where I guess the young man who won all these trophies as a woman it went back to play against men and really got creamed, you know.
Yes.
Which is kind of sad. That I wonder how many young women didn't get a scholarship because of this guy pretending
to
be a girl. You know, that's the part that bothers me most about this whole movement. I mean, I really don't care if an adult wants to change their sex. I mean, I really don't care about that. But when you're talking about messing around with the scholarship money of young women, I have five nieces, and some of them were active in sports and all of that, and I know how hard it was and how hard they worked for these none of them were good enough to get athletic scholarships, but I mean they still worked extremely hard. And to think that one of them would have lost her scholarship to a guy, that would have made me very angry, Bill.
Yes, well, that's exactly what happened, and you'll notice, by the way, the silence of the women's movement.
Absolutely.
What a disgrace! What a disgrace
Absolutely.
They have come. We have a revolution in Iran led heavily by women, and the so-called women's groups in America have no expression of support at all, and not one question is asked of them by the American press. It is
that's
really
right.
horrifying to see what has developed in this country.
No, I think you're right. I mean, the American news media, look at what's happening in Iran with women. You know, you would think that there would be marches here in the United States calling on Iran to liberate these women, but you don't see that one bit. A couple of big stories this week that I want to get into. We touched a little bit on the border at the beginning, but I want to talk a little bit more about that. But let's go to the House of Representatives. I have to confess that on Friday night, after vote number 14, that I was pretty angry at two members of the Republican caucus.
Yes.
The guy from Florida and the other lady from Colorado.
Matt Gaetz and Boebert.
Yeah, I thought those two were honestly pretty stupid in what they were doing. Eventually, one of them turned around, I guess, and he was able to get the minimum. Which, by the way, it's the same number that Nancy Pelosi got 4 years before, 2 years before.
Yes.
Now they didn't have to do recounts with her, but still. And I bring this up, Bill. I mentioned this about Nancy Pelosi because every Friday night the media keep talking about how united the Democrats are, how united the Democrats are, and yeah, no more united than 2 years ago when all the Republicans voted for McCarthy as minority leader, Bill. So, you know, I think sometimes they exaggerate all of this unity, but I think it came out okay. I stayed up to listen to McCarthy, and that was as far as I got his speech. But I thought the speech by Jeffries was way over the top partisan, Bill. I kept thinking, is that what they always do? They give partisan speeches like that? I don't remember. But he was really partisan in his speech. Did you think the same thing, Bill?
Yes. Hakeem Jeffries, look, he's from New York. He actually is considered one of the good guys, one of the people who hasn't gone woke. But he checked off the necessary racial components. But unfortunately, now he's beginning to move to the left to satisfy the base of the Democratic Party. It's too bad because he does have the capacity of being a good leader. But they destroy – and the Democratic Party, to be a good leader nowadays, you have to check off certain boxes. And he apparently felt he had to do it. He made some other speeches after that, his speech to the House, that were equally offensive, completely partisan. And completely distorted, suggesting that everything the Republicans do is partisan, not reflecting on what his own party does.
I don't
know. We had some optimism when he was selected that, well, yes, it was an affirmative action selection, but he's basically a decent guy. But he's been a decent guy up to now. Now we find who the real Jeffries is, and it may not be a pleasant picture.
No, and I have to give it to Mr. Jeffries. He's a heck of a speaker. I got to give it to him.
Yes.
He's an amazing speaker. And so I have to admit that I liked his delivery and the way he was speaking. I thought it was great. But it was the content that I thought he way over the top with the partisan stuff. I haven't watched a lot of those speeches before, but what I always remember is sort of the formality, you know, the tradition where they pass the gavel and everybody's trying to be nice to each other. I don't remember a partisan speech like that before. But then again, I have to admit, I haven't seen any of them. But I thought he was way over the top. And for a man, to me, the most enjoyable line of the whole night from Mr. Jeffries was, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said something about how we have to accept election results. And I'm sitting there saying to myself, just like you, Mr. Jeffries, right?
Yes, right.
Just like you. Just like you accepted the election results of President Trump, Mr. Jeffries.
He knows that he will not be challenged on it by the press.
Yes.
They will come in and protect him. That is why the danger of the press has become so great, that when you have a one-party press, this is what happens.
That's right.
There's no accountability.
There's none. You're right. That's scary, really, when you think about it. But I'm actually... I don't know if you saw the editorial or the column in Powerline either this morning or last night, where one of the three gentlemen over there at Powerline was saying that he actually feels a little bit more optimistic about this Congress because he's watching the reaction over at MSNBC, and he says if those people are freaking out like that, there must be something good about this Congress. I don't know that they're going to be able to do much of anything, Bill, because of the numbers. They don't have the numbers to – I mean, they're going to need every Republican to get anything done. So that's always a challenge. But I do think the investigations are going to be effective. And if all they do this year, Bill, is explain to me and to you and everybody else what the FBI was doing with Twitter, and then explain to all of us how Hunter Biden got so rich without any experience in the energy industry, Bill, if they can explain those two things – I'll put it down as a pretty successful year, Bill.
I will, too. I'd also like to have them explain how Joe Biden got to be a multimillionaire on a government salary. That's a question that's come up before with members of Congress. But when he went into Congress in the early 1970s, he was basically a man of very average wealth. And now he has apparently a mansion, lives enormously well. I guess it's because his wife is a teacher. It's her salary that's doing this. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
it's Dr. Biden's salary. That's what
Dr.
it is, Bill.
Biden,
Dr.
Yeah.
Biden. Her salary as a whatever she is, and I say that with all due respect. You know, I'm not making fun of her. But, you know, all these doctors in education make millions of dollars, Bill.
People don't realize education is a business. It's not a profession. It's a business, and it's a business where a lot of money is being made. I mean, you see, first of all, college president salaries are up at the level of corporate salaries.
Right.
Some professors, I remember when one professor tooled around Harvard in a Jaguar. And where does the college professor get the money for a Jaguar? Well, he was wanted, not because he actually did anything, because he had a name. I mean, people forget the actual name of Yale is the Yale Corporation. These are businesses. They run on a business basis. They have hired in the last 10 years at the University of California more administrators than professors, which I'm sure will make these students very happy. They have all those administrators teaching them. And, of course, it was all based on this diversity business. Diversity is now a business. You can make a lot of money preaching diversity.
Right.
Some people call it the race industry, and it is. You know, it was John McCain who used to quote a writer of the 1950s named Eric Hoffer. Eric Hoffer was called the longshoreman philosopher because he spent so many years as a longshoreman. And he wrote that all causes become businesses, then they become rackets.
Right.
And that's exactly what you're seeing in the world of education.
That's right. Well, another thing, by the way, is you mentioned California, and I just wanted to make this quick point before we talk about the border. I just saw a report that California is facing in 2023 something like a $25 billion budget deficit, that they have some really big money problems out there. Apparently, they spent too much money. I guess that's what happened, and they lost some of these funds from the federal government. They were using a lot of that money for COVID to cover their expenses. And now they have a really major deficit, which is going to put a lot of pressure on Governor Newsom. They're going to have to make some big cuts out there. That's what I'm saying, Bill, because they have to balance the budget. That's the difference between their Constitution and the federal Constitution. They have to balance the budget. And unless they plan to raise $24 billion in taxes, I don't know who they're going to get it from. They're going to have to make some major cuts out there, Bill. And it's interesting because it ties into what the governor said recently, Governor Newsom, that the illegal immigration was taking the state to a breaking point. And I wonder if that's what he was talking about, Bill.
Well, he has taken the state to the breaking point. I mean, as you said, the money is going to have to come from somewhere. It's going to come from either taxes or cutting really valuable programs that actually work, because you can't cut the programs that don't work. If you cut the programs that don't work, it's racism, because things will be even worse off. One of the biggest problems California has is people are leaving in droves. You know, we think of California as the golden coast on the west, and a couple of very, very wealthy enclaves like Palo Alto and places like that. But the reality is California is an awfully big state. There's an East California that is more conservative than the people on the water. And I don't know where the money is going to come from. I suspect it will be new taxes. And I suspect it will hit the middle class very, very hard. And he will say, well, we have to do this for equity because we are committed to equity. And besides this, there is a very serious move in California, as you know, to start paying reparations. Where is this money going to come from?
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's going to come from the citizens, because they're going to bail out even more if they have to pay reparations. What I've never understood about reparations, Bill, is how do they make out the list or the requirements for who gets what?
Well, yes.
I mean, the last time that anybody in the United States was a slave, if my history is correct, was 1865, wasn't it?
That's
when
correct.
The 13th Amendment was approved. So we haven't had anybody. Now, I'm not saying that there wasn't discrimination, and obviously there was, and segregation, and I get all of that. But how do you draw the line? Where do you say, well, you qualify, but you don't qualify, and if the only qualification is race, then where does that put a man like Colin Powell, for example, who was the son of Jamaican immigrants? I mean, does he get something too just because he's black? I mean, it's crazy, Bill, but that, you know, hopefully it won't never get there, but these people are crazy in what they're demanding, Bill.
Oh, absolutely. They, you know, somebody said this is a situation where people who never owned slaves will be given, be giving reparation to people who never were slaves. And it's, I mean, the backlash is going to be enormous. It will not be reported, though, as enormous. The usual suspects in television will start interviewing white people who say, oh, yes, this is something we should do. And you're going to get a real sales job by the press, by the left-wing press, where these people sitting there making billions of dollars reading teleprompters will say, oh, this is something we really must, it's been long overdue. Mm-hmm. And when people see it in their tax return, I think they're going to feel very, very differently.
Well, I wonder how African-Americans are going to feel, Bill. Because, you know, I would think that there are many of them who think that this is crazy. I mean, I've spoken to African-Americans who think that this is a completely unmanageable program. You know, it's impossible to determine who qualifies for it. You know, as I say, it's been 150 years since we had this problem, Bill.
That's right. And I suspect some African-Americans will go for the program because there are in every group, doesn't matter what race they are, very greedy people who just want the money. And there are others who will be more reflective and realize what this is going to do to them, not for them, but to them, that the resentments that are going to be built from people who are going to say, I did nothing wrong. My family came here after slavery ended. I see no reason why, with all the burdens I already have, college and things like that, I have to pay something to members of a group who are not slaves and who have been the beneficiary of many government programs.
Right.
You know, this could be a backbreaking issue. I don't know if it'll ever actually get there, because some of the eastern states are going along with it and starting to do their own reparations programs. I think it may peter out at some point.
Well, I hope so, because it's such an unfair and ridiculous idea. Bill, I want to talk about the border. Big issue, as we talked about it at the beginning, but I want to come back to it for a second. A lot of people are beginning to say that this visit to the border is not turning out the way they thought it was going to turn out, by the sheer images that you see on television. And the real part of this visit, Bill, is the trip to Mexico. And President Biden is in Mexico right now, where he faces, he's in a country where the violence is very strong. You may have heard that El Chapo's son was captured, and there was a city in the Pacific part of Mexico where the city has been almost like in a war zone for the last two or three days. And, you know, he faces a country that has economic problems as well. So to me, that's the most important part of this visit. And I know that privately the president of Mexico is not happy with Biden's border policy, because how could he be happy, Bill? Mexico has become nothing but an avenue to come to the United States. And all these, you know, these illegal criminal elements, they're the ones benefiting from all of this. Mexico isn't benefiting from any of this. So I think it's going to get very complicated down in Mexico City, Bill, when they sit down and they start talking privately, Bill.
I think you're absolutely right. Also, the United States comes off as weak, the Mexicans are, as a nation, not getting anything out of it, as you pointed out. The people who are benefiting from this are the individual immigrants, although they have a very hard road, but they get all kinds of benefits from the United States. And, of course, the Democratic Party benefits, because you can be sure that once a certain number of are here, a very serious proposal will be made to make them eligible to vote in all elections. And the press will get right behind that as well. It's only fair, after all they've gone through, that they should have the right to vote. And they want to also lower the voting age to 16. Why don't they lower it to 10?
Right.
You know, I mean, no maturity required. It's a very bad situation. I don't think that Biden's trip to the border will have any positive effect. Certainly no positive effect. It was barely a trip to the border. I mean, it was just a visit. I don't know if Kamala Harris has gone. Maybe she went also and looked at a few high chairs and a few teddy bears and thought, oh, this is good. This is good. They're turning them into adults.
Right.
And but I mean, it can be, if the Republicans play it right, and again, that's a big if these days, if the Republicans play it right, this could be a very, very big issue. And
it
should
be
a very big issue. Yeah.
It should be a big issue. And I found, Bill, one thing that I kept wondering what was going to happen when President Biden met Governor Abbott. And obviously the governor has to go, or normally the governor goes to welcome the president when the president goes to the home state. So that, I knew that was going to happen. But the governor presented President Biden with a letter, and the letter has been made public. And the letter was about as rough on the president as anything I've ever seen, Bill. I mean, the governor basically said, do your job. And I don't know. I'm glad that it came out that way, Bill. I'm glad the governor stood up to the president respectfully, but he stood up to him, Bill.
Yes, I saw that. I thought it was just magnificent because Biden is not doing his job. Look, when you are president of the United States on the Democratic side, and you know you will have the major media behind you and protecting you, which is what exists today, you're not going to be too enthusiastic about, quote, doing your job. You're going to do the job that keeps the approval of the major media. That's one of the tragedies of where we are right now, and it is a very, very serious situation for the future of this country.
And also, Bill, if you noticed in the photo or the video that came out, when President Biden met Governor Abbott, behind President Biden was Henry Cuellar from the border. And look, I think Henry Cuellar agrees with everything that's on that letter, Bill, because Henry Cuellar has been one of the greatest critics of this administration. But I'm glad to see the governor stand up to the president respectfully. He didn't say anything. He treated the president with all the courtesy and respect that the office merits. But I'm glad to see that Governor Abbott did that. I was really proud of Governor Abbott for standing up to, again, I say standing up, not being disrespectful. He was totally respectful. But just the fact that he was willing to confront the president and say, here's the problem, do something, please.
Yes, well, I think he's terrific. And, you know, he's once again a member of that great and deep Republican Party bench, any one of whose members could be president of the United States.
That's right. And, you know, I was thinking the same thing. I'm glad you brought it up. Because we don't talk about Governor Abbott as a potential presidential. Nobody talks about it, but I do, at least in my mind, think that I don't think he'll be a VP because he wouldn't bring anything to a ticket being
That's
the VP.
Right.
I mean, they're already going to win Texas. But I can see him as a candidate, effective governor, someone who has a record to run on. I mean, I like him a lot. He's turned out to be a first-class governor. Well, Bill, one thing we can say for the last time, we can say that we won't have Speaker Pelosi to kick around anymore, Bill. So she's gone, at least, well, as Speaker. She's still a member of Congress. But she's not going to be around anymore, and that's probably a good thing.
Well, it is probably a good thing. I like the phraseology that was used, of course, by Richard Nixon, saying you won't have Nixon to kick around anymore. I have a feeling that Nancy will find some way to stay involved. I don't think she's the kind to give up power easily. She's no longer Speaker. She is a member of Congress from her congressional district. I don't see any reason why she shouldn't run again. We may still have her as one of the ghosts of the Democratic Party who sits there and is ghost-like.
Right. Maybe she's planning a comeback, Bill, the next time around. Planning a comeback. She'll have to explain that to Mr. Jeffries, though, if she's planning. Because he wants to be Speaker probably also. Bill, as always, thank you for your time, and thank you for giving us the time and the good conversation. And you have a wonderful day, and we'll talk to you the next time, Bill.
Looking forward to it, Silvio.
All right. Thank you so much. Our good friend, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. I always recommend their Urgent Agenda to everybody that I come across. Have a good day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.